right now.
11 hour and I.
Now the lights dim low, soon we'll start the show.
Here comes LF Network.
It used to these days. Trouble ain't what I'm getting into. It feels good to be back on track. Looking in the mirror don't hurt so bad. I hated that it took you packing up your bags and leaving me to make me see. I still hear that goodbye and the front door closing. I still see that dust cloud. When the good years go in, guess you left just enough of you behind to wake me up for good this time. You didn't have to stay to make me change. A little memory goes a long, long way. I try long drives, but you always seem to follow. Hid behind neon lights, left me empty as a bottle. And every night seemed to be more the same. Everything that ever drove you away. But I'm a dollar short and a day late of maybe ever getting you back one day. I still hear that goodbye and the front door closing. I still see that dust cloud from the good years going. You left just enough of you behind to wake me up for good this time. You didn't have to stay to make me change. A little memory goes a long, long way. Yeah, I die inside every time I relive it. I made my bed, now I'm lying here in it.
Josh Thompson on the Midwood Files. That actually goes out by request to the Pinball Wizard, who's apparently having better days, which is good for him. If not me, then at least you're my friend. Welcome to the Midwood Files. My name is LF Midwood. I've doubled the light in here, so I can... it's like... it's really bad. I can't see the friggin'... No, I can actually see it. But it's a lot brighter in here. Programming note. I have opted to drop out the middle set for as long as I'm running an hour show. So that means there'll be one opening song, there'll be one closing song, and there'll be a lot of me in between. And that's lucky for me. There is a lot of me, but anyway, hopefully it'll be lucky for you as well, too. After conferring with several regular listeners and or watchers of the program, I just decided that it just wasn't fair to deprive you of 15 minutes of me when I'm only running an hour. That's 25%. 25% less me. How could we possibly get by with 25% less me? So I'm not. I'm dropping out that middle set. So it's just me, which is good. If I'm going to save this program, and it doesn't need saving, if I'm going to save the program, I'm going to have to get back in the Ameren. I mean, in some sort of comprehensible fashion, which is challenging on a weekly basis. But yeah, I decided I need to get the talk back into some sort of, and then I can add music back in, and then I can kind of build it out to that 90 or possibly even 2 hours, possibly even a 2 hour program in the near future. But we'll have to see. We're going to take it one show at a time. And I am here this week, and I tell you, I went to the doctor yesterday, my doc, for my quarterly, well, it's actually a diabetes checkup, but he does everything. He's pretty cool. And it seems my blood, the AC1, I think it's still at 6.3, which is considered to be pre-diabetic, which is pretty good because there were a couple of, there was one huge bag of Swedish fish. Swedish fish, the official snack of Shark Week, I would like to point out. There was a huge bag of Swedish fish. There was like a couple of 2 liters of regular Coke in there. There were huge amounts of carbs at various points in time. Huge. I'm going to say huge. What's it moving? Like huge amounts. And I stayed at 6.3, which is actually pretty good. And I wasn't even trying. Which leads me to believe that if I... and that's with the meds, don't get me wrong. But that leads me to believe that if I actually applied myself, I could get it to drop lower than that. So I'm going to do that. I'm going to actually apply myself, believe it or not. Yeah, because I keep hovering. I'm hovering weight-wise. I'm at that 235, and it really kills me because it's just hard for me to drop super under 235. Now it's no longer, you know, not being, you know, it's not easy. At 235, you really got to put work into it for me because, you know, I think I've been 235 longer than anything else in the last 15 years. Easy. So, you know, you get to that mid, I don't know, 48, I'm middle-aged. Is that even middle-aged anymore? I don't know. I talk to people who are, like, older than 48, and they're like, 48 is not middle-aged. So I don't know what middle-aged is. I'm not quite sure what elderly is anymore. I have no comprehensive understanding of these terms that don't get me yelled at. So that being the case, I'll just assume that at 48, I got some time on the clock. I got a little bit of time on the clock left. So I've decided, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm gonna get back to the gym on a regular basis. I'm gonna, you know, my big thing is, quite frankly, is this wrist. This wrist is still a problem, and it was actually feeling pretty good yesterday. I went to the doctor. Let me finish up with the doctor. And he says, with the exception of your back, you know, which we know about as being, chronic and not going anywhere soon, and my bipolar, which is also, again, not going anywhere soon, although ranges from chronic to not so much. You're fine. You're in pretty decent health. But all of this is med control. This is the thing. You know, I guess I wonder what kind of health I would be in without the meds. You know, because I'm on meds for my, I'm on meds for stuff. We'll just put it that way. I'm on meds for a lot of things, including the diabetes. I wonder if you put a diabetes, how far that number would go up, is what I actually wonder. And that's something that, a lot of doctors are now starting to really take into consideration is the fact that, they'll give you a medication for something, particularly diabetes, and what it'll do is it'll mask the symptoms, meaning it'll mask the numbers. So you'll go and you'll do your daily numbers and you'll do that quarterly slice, that AC1 or ACL1, whatever the hell it is. I never get that right. And the numbers look good, you know, but it's actually the whatever medications you're on, or medication or medications, and I guess people are on multiple medications. I happen to be on one, metformin, which is like probably the first one they start you out on when you are diabetic too. So I guess I'm still doing all right. I do expect that to get worse as I get older. Quite frankly, I expect everything to get worse as I get older. Isn't that the way of things? So, the appointment went, like I said, relatively well. We didn't do any blood workups. We're going to do stuff like that in January. So I know, like, cholesterol and all that stuff. But I'm all right. It seems I'm physically okay, you know. Mentally, you know, mezmez as the Yiddish say, mezmez. As my uncle used to say, mezmez. I guess that takes time. That goes up and down, and that takes time. And sometimes I just feel like lately, just as of late, I feel like I'm more of an observer in my own life than I actually am participating in my own life. I'm on, like, I've meant it just a few times before. It feels like I'm on autopilot. I'm just kind of, you know, which is great, I guess, as long as, you know, you're not, there aren't any other planes in your, planes in your path, you should do just fine. But, I sit around and I'm like, I don't really recognize the world that I live in very much anymore. You know, there's like things that I see that are like, remind me of something, you know, like when I was younger, you know, a child, even, dare I say, you know, into my teens and 20s, perhaps, you know, where I'll see something and it's like reminiscent, but it's really not that thing. The world has changed radically in just a very short period of time. And I guess it's kind of interesting because we go through, I guess, I kind of left off with, like, Clinton's 8 years, you know? I got to honestly say W's 8 years were kind of like a lot of change for me personally in W's 8 years, yeah, politically certainly. And the idea of the second Gulf War, I was talking to somebody about that today, where they're like, why in hell did we go and invade Iraq when it was, you know, Pakistan and Afghanistan that were pretty much responsible for the 9/11 attacks? And I mentioned the non-existent weapons of mass destruction, and they're like, oh yeah, you know, because that was like a kind of little factor involved with that. But I also mentioned that 23 of, I forget, what is it, 17 of 23, I forget what the number is because I'm a moron, of the hijackers on those planes were Saudis. Saudi Arabia in the news big this week, by the way. They were Saudis. And actually, there's been a lot of controversy because I think, to my recollection, there's been, you know, but I tend to watch stuff like In Plain Sight. And I would say I'm interested in the truth of movement. I don't, too much truth for me, and I don't do so well, as some of you know. Too much truth for me, and I don't do that well. So I want to call it fringe, and I'm not going to call myself a truther. I definitely do not believe the official 9/11 report, the commission report story. No, 100%. And this isn't going to be a show about 9/11, don't worry. But it will be referenced. I think I missed that. I would have missed that by about a month, right? Which is pretty typical for me. So, yeah, there were X amount of Saudis involved with, and how come we didn't go bomb Saudi Arabia, which is an excellent question, not for nothing. Yeah, I put Saudi on the, you know, Saudi Arabia on that frenemy list. I think I mentioned that frenemy list from time to time. That would be in order, in worst to best order, it would be Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, Israel, by my estimations, you know. And I just say Israel because Israel has this tendency of just getting us into trouble to one degree or another, or at least putting us in awkward situations in regards to trying to keep the peace in the Mideast. Peace in the Mideast. Peace in the Midwest. You know, those of you who are Sports Night fans will get that reference. It's pretty funny, actually. So, yeah. I kind of was trying to kind of justify going into Iraq. And I wish, you know, the only reason I can say this is because I had the conversation earlier today, and it's fresh on my brain pan, is I definitely was not a fan of the neocons by any stretch of the imagination. I don't like the fact that we went in, we couldn't, you know, it was most flimsy of evidence, right? And I think if Saddam Hussein needed to be removed, and I definitely believe he needed to be removed. I believe it could have been done in a cost that wasn't as high to the United States. Let's just put it that way. Now, the idea of going in somewhere and disenfranchising the Ba'ath Party, who basically were running the show. I mean, Saddam was a member of the Ba'ath Party. I think we could have just as easily just walked in there and killed him. Or possibly had done something covertly, you know, and had him removed. And we could have used the mechanism of the Ba'ath Party to keep Iraq from falling into the disarray that it did, the political disarray that obviously was deadly for all sides involved. What we tried to do was to set up some sort of coalition that would govern fairly and equally going forward. And I think if we had maybe paid attention to what happened to the British when they were there right before they left, I think we would have gotten the idea that I don't know if these people are ready for that, quite frankly. See, that's my thing. You know, I get in these arguments with spirited debates with associates of mine in regards to, like, Islam. And I'm not... You know, it's like, oh, well, you're racist against Islam. And I don't know if it qualifies as racist because Islam is not a race. But I get the overtones. I get the inflections in what this person is trying to say to me. And yeah, I am. I mean, I make no qualms about it. You know, to judge a entire religion, and there's like what, billions of them, by the acts of what are a small percentage of followers who are obviously looking at a distorted, or using a distorted. How am I just trying to get a DS or working on it? distorted view of the Quran maybe isn't fair, you know. But as was discussed, I mean, the idea, at least in my mind, is I look, first of all, obviously 9/11 was horrendous. It was literally horrendous. And I personally feel that that moderate Islam has not really done a sterling job. I think the word sterling is the word of the day. A sterling job of differentiating themselves, of distancing themselves from these radicals. You could even, depending upon who you're willing to believe, you could even trace sources of financing for some of what radical Islam uses to train their people, which, yes, again, is mostly done in the Pakistan, Afghanistan area, you know, that mountainous area that no one can get to, although I'm pretty sure we could if we tried. I think we just don't want to, I'm going to take my slippers off. I got flannel pants on, slippers over here, John Lennon shirt. I'm just getting a little comfortable. It is starting to feel a little cooler around here, and I am digging that. I am digging that to the umps. I used to love the fall, and now I don't really love anything, but the fall's still cool. Anyway. A lot of cash is moving around in a manner that would be somewhat interesting if we had a lot more forensic tracing. And I'm sure we do. I'm sure the United States government has a pretty good idea of where the money's coming from and where the money's going. I think Pakistan is considered to be our best ally in the war on terror because of all the terrorists that are trained and exported from Pakistan. I think they have, you know, that's why they got the grip on that, you know. They're the experts on that. I started to think about, you know, should I feel bad? I mean, should I feel bad that basically I'm holding a whole religion responsible for the acts of percentage-wise a minuscule amount of people? And the analogy of schwarzes, you know, is that the word I decided I was going to use for niggas to be nice? I don't remember. Whatever it was, you get the idea. I decided that, you know, very much like the schwarzes, only I say, oh, it's not schwarz, oh, it's a schwarz. I like it. Schwarz. The schwarzes are only 13% of the population, and if you peel off the infirm, you know, or I think the infirms are the only ones not committing crimes, quite frankly, because even those kids and those women are at it at times, you know. It's a very small percentage of the population, and not for nothing, I'm sure that, I know for a fact, I'm not even sure, this isn't even something I have to guess at. I'm sure that a large percentage of Afro-Americans, see, that's the difference between Afro-Americans and niggers, right? Niggers are bad, Afro-Americans are good, right? I'm sure there's lots of Afro-Americans who have nothing to do with crime and lead, you know, productive, good member of society lives. You know, like I said, I've been fortunate enough to know more than a few of these people. But the point is that they suffer because of their less than, you know, their brethren who aren't with the program, right? Yeah, it's true. I mean, you know, what would you expect the case to be? You know, it's the classic sense of I can't really differentiate, so I'm going to assume just for, you know, what is it, err on the side of caution? Is that what the expression is? I think that might be what the expression is. Yeah, I'm going to err on the side of caution. And I think with Islam, it gets a little bit more complicated because it would seem that there is a ginormous anti-American sentiment that permeates throughout the Mideast. And I guess that we could argue, we saying, I was trying to get into a conversation about the idea of how how the West, and when I say the West, I mean Europe. So I guess I would be speaking mostly of, anywhere west of the Middle East, but I guess when you're going to Europe, we speak of, obviously, France, England, Germany to a lesser degree. You know, the Middle East being a honeypot of natural resources as far as petroleum goes, has always historically been a place of great turmoil, and even where there wasn't outright colonialism and occupation, which was obviously the case with at least the British, there's been financial and political pressure put on various factions and various countries at various times in order to ensure that the black gold kept flowing, or at least the direction that it flew in. I just made a word. I haven't done that in a while. So, I get the idea, and, you know, why there's a large anti-West sentiment, but by the same token, they've never had a problem taking Western money, and they've never, you know, they can't sell oil to each other, or maybe they can, I don't really know. But, I kind of have to balance all these things out, you know, and then there's, like, when we look at, like, again, we'll go back to somewhere like Saudi Arabia, and I guess the basic story, I guess I'll reiterate. I won't be reiterating, but I'll be stating for the first time, but it's obviously been a big story this week. There was a Saudi national who was, I believe, living in the U.S., who went into the Turkish embassy, who went into the Saudi embassy in Turkey, and apparently never came back out. They presume him to have been murdered and dismembered and removed in pieces from the embassy. And this is a journalist who was highly critical of the royal family, which apparently is not something you really want to do if you're a journalist from Saudi Arabia. Apparently not. Now, normally, any other, person from the Middle East, couldn't think of any pejorative quickly enough, quite frankly. Any person of the from the Middle East normally like, but I don't like a journalist of any nationality, quite frankly, or from any particular place to be murdered unanswered, you know, because if we can't get information, if there isn't a flow of information from journalists, large and small, and I think most of you know that I'm not a big fan of the major media outlets, and prefer smaller, even citizen journalism, I find to be. It's certainly come a long way in the last 10 years, given the internet, best thing and worst thing ever happened to humankind, right? The internet. Unfortunately, you have to be that tall in order to use it, but anyway. And I think the reports now seem to indicate that his Apple Watch, he was wearing an Apple Watch, and the Apple Watch recorded the majority of his beating. I believe he was beaten and tortured and then murdered. And I believe the Apple Watch uploaded the audio to something in, I guess, one of the clouds. I guess it would have to be one of the Apple Cloud, or I don't even know how many Apple Clouds there are. And his fiance was able to download it and hear it posthumously, which is very sad for her, obviously. But it is audio evidence that this incident actually occurred. And people are mad at the Saudis now. And rightfully so, I suppose, right? I mean, you think of the Saudi royal... When I think of the Saudi royal family, I think of the fact that there's like 8 gazillion of them, first of all, right? And I think of the fact that like a generation and a half ago, they were trading camel dung. I mean, I guess it would be Jean-Paul Getty, I'm thinking, who really first... managed to get some of the oil out of the ground and managed to bring megabucks to what were basically Bedouin itself would be an adjective for these people, Bedouins. So it's only a generation and a half ago that they were nothing. And then they became fabulously wealthy. It's like the Beverly Hillbillies, only in Saudi Arabia, I think. So, yeah. And, you know, I think for the most part, I think money has been reasonably distributed to the wealth of the country. I'm not going to say evenly, but I mean, certainly... more so than, say, like the American Indians in their casinos, because that money doesn't seem to trickle down to the poorest of Indians. Not that I'm a fan of the Indians either. You know what? I'm not a fucking fan of anybody now that I think about it. But I don't think this is news to anybody who listens to this show on a regular basis. So it did. The point becomes is if we're talking a generation and a half ago, then it took at least a generation for Saudi Arabia to become built up in regards to infrastructure and schools and medicine and all sorts of other things. I believe they lead the way in trying to come up with alternative fuels, which makes the sense, because I think they realize eventually they're not going to be able to pull dead dinosaurs out of the ground. So they've done a lot of research into that as well. So, I mean, by all accounts, they're reasonably upstanding citizens, except, you know, they don't treat women really well. You know, and that has more to do, and this is where these conversations come in with, well, is you know, what's good Islam? We know what bad Islam is. Bad Islam, let's say bad Islam is 9/11. Let's assume that that's worst case scenario for bad Islam, 9/11. Okay, so we've established that. What's on the other end of that scale? What's good Islam? You know, and I'm like, I look around and, you know, I'm ignorant. I mean, I'm as ignorant as the next American. You know what I mean? I'm reasonably bright, but I don't do anything, but I don't really care. I haven't really read any books in the last decade and a half. You know, I'm coasting along, watching television, and I don't even read news stories anymore. I just read the headline. I'm too lazy to click. What? I can't even get a click, because I know if I click, I'm going to have to read something, and that might mean that I need to retain something, and I'm just not into doing that. I don't really care, is what it comes down to. But I also don't like sitting here and talking shit, so I have to kind of, you know, be honest about the fact that I don't care, and I'm reasonably ignorant to a degree. I am, you know. I like to think that I'm comedically ignorant. I like to think that my ignorance is of amusement. Let's just put it that way. So, I mean, there's a limited amount that I do know about Saudi Arabia, but I know that they were recently, at one point in time, voted on to, or they were put on the United Nations thing for advancement of women, and I know that was really thought to be somewhat ludicrous. Now you have to ask yourself, and this becomes a big question, is Islam itself responsible for the way that women are treated in Islam, or is it cultural? Because remember, Islam, it's not a nationality. It's a religion. It's a religion bordering on a political, I wouldn't say party, but I would say a political philosophy, certainly, meaning it's literally meant to be all-encompassing. They have the Sharia law, which is kind of like the Ten Commandments, only there's a lot more of them. No, that's not true. It's actually Sharia law, I guess, would be more like, what the Jews came up with outside of, like, the Ten Commandments. You know, like, the rest of the Torah would be observations and things of that nature. So, yeah, it's not like there's 10 written in stone, and that's what it is. It's a lot more advanced than that. But it's also meant to be, as I said, it's meant to be something that a society would actually live by via, I believe, obviously, Iran is a theocracy. I believe they're interpreting Sharia in one way. And I forget whether they're Shiites or Sunnis, but whatever the other one is, because there's two different, there's more than two. I guess there would be more than two now that I think about it. You know, just like any other religion, there are very many sects. Or offshoots, but the primary would be Shiites and Sunnis. And Iran and Iraq are one, and the rest of the Arab world are the other. So just to make that a little less clear, if at all I could. So yeah, it's you know, is Judaism or Christianity, is that ready to be dropped in and you could actually, you know, have a, yeah, I guess it is. I guess to a degree, especially I view Christianity as such. I'm a little biased in that regard, obviously. But I suppose Judaism is as well, too. But yet, for the most part, you don't really have any countries that are being ruled under the law, under religious law, other than Iran. And I don't know, is Saudi Arabia a theocracy? I guess I could look that up. I'm not really that interested. I'm for some reason I'm thinking that they are, or at the very least I know that there's the royal family and there's the Imams, and the Imams or the Imams are they're constantly going at it in regards to what the way things should be and the way things are. So I guess there's that exchange of money and wealth versus religious piety, and they kind of keep each other in balance over there. I should not. Yeah, I'm not even into. I'm really not, because then I changed the lighting and I worked too hard on it. So yeah. but Saudi Arabia may be close to a theocracy. Let's just put it that way. And I kind of, like I said, I'm going back, and I'm like, I'm trying to look at like the good, and I'm like, well, I'm sure, and this is it. I guess we don't really see the good, right? I guess you don't really get to see the millions, if not billions, of is it that high? Well, it could be actually of Muslims who are just going about, you know, living their lives and, you know, ordering pizza without meat on it, I suppose, without pork on it, anyway, and watching football, which I guess would be soccer, their version would be soccer, and raising their kids and not really bothering anybody. I have to assume these exist, right, because we know it's the same with Judaism, and we know it's the same with Christianity, but yet, for some reason, in the modern era, and I don't even know if we could say modern era, but I mean, within certainly the last, you know, 50 years, there's been a reason for the rest of the world to be extremely fearful, if not cautious, of these people. And I'm like, you know, and I sit there and I'm like, you know, I try and be fair, you know, I'm like, yeah, you know what I'm saying? And then I think about 9/11, and I know that was radicalized, that was a certain radicalized perspective of the Quran, right? But I look at, and I write, from what, and because I don't know, I've read the Quran in English, parts of it in English when I was in prison, and my understanding is if you don't read it in Arabic, it loses its, I don't know, it loses whatever it's got to lose. So I'm not qualified enough to say, but, you know, people are like, oh, well, Muhammad married, young women, young girls, and I look back, and I'm like, I kind of look at, like, what some of the stuff, or at least for, like, you know, some of the shenanigans that went on in the Old Testament, you know? And I'm like, well, I mean, that's definitely not good by today's standards, and I don't think it's something that should be continued. But I don't know if I'm willing to condemn a whole religion based upon these small matters, you know? Or at least these elements, these hopefully antiquated elements. But they're not. See, that's the thing. I guess that's the thing. You know, you speak to people who are, I don't know if you could say, you know, pro-Muslim, but you certainly speak to people who aren't plugged into the American and the Western, I guess it's not just us, and the Western news pipeline, you know, and they're like, oh, well, but it's not like that all the time, and I'm like, but it's like that some of the time, right? I mean, these people, they're obviously finding some level of they're finding a certain level of support for their beliefs and what they're doing within the Quran, even if it's a misplaced interpretation. It makes them, and this is the thing, I and a lot of other people seem to think that Islam is not compatible with democracy, and I firmly maintain that to be true. From what I've seen and what I've observed, and I guess we could, to a certain degree, just kind of look over at Europe, and you know, the gap between 9/11 and Europe was pretty wide. I mean, there's been certain things that have occurred, you know, that the radicals have obviously unleashed upon us, but a pretty wide friggin' gap. And the thing of it is that you look over in Europe now, you look and see what's going on in Germany and France and certainly Italy. Again, the Eternal City has shit in the streets. It comes down to the idea of, this is happening now. This isn't a real now. This isn't like long, long ago, or this doesn't have anything to do with anything other than the way that these people are behaving. And what they're doing is that they're being accommodated because of what wind up being described as refugee situations, which I suppose, you know, to a degree is true. Although I still maintain Syria is like the world's biggest clown car. These people just keep coming out, and they all seem to be men from 18 to like 49. I don't know what's going on with that, but it seems to be the case. And they're in Europe, and they're being welcomed, or at least they were being welcomed with open arms by the vast majority of citizenry, less so now after it seems cultural enrichment is not exactly what these European countries had planned on it being. And they're, you know, they're basically, what they're doing is just supporting these people. They're coming to this country, I shouldn't say this country, thank God. But they're coming to Europe, and they're decimating European culture. And overnight, or over a fortnight, it's going to be pretty soon nobody's going to know what a fortnight was, but a really short period of time, they're inundated the system. And, you know, places like Germany are, you know, Merkel is still, you know, a big refugee / immigrant fan. And I think she's eventually going to pay with that, you know, pay for it at the polls, because I think, you know, the German people are really tolerant, you know, and I think they have like an inferiority complex, you know, after starting two world wars. I think they're a little on the side, you know, they don't want to rock the boat, you know what I mean? Nobody says, you know, shh, quiet, shh, you know? Sweden, like the other Nordic countries, they're the same way, you know, they're welcoming these refugees and come in. And these people are behaving, I think the term is behaving badly. You could obviously say that they're behaving very badly in these European countries and in these Nordic countries. And so we, as you know, Americans, we can kind of look. And a lot of people talk about Dearborn, and I don't know what's going on in Dearborn. I don't. You know, I've heard that the Sharia law and all that in Dearborn, and I'm like, I don't. I've read things, and I'm like, I don't know if that's actually. But I've read, you know, relative mainstream media pieces, you know what I'm saying? So you have to wonder the veracity of those accounts, quite frankly, being true. But I've read things, and like Dearborn's not necessarily as you know, as bad as some people would like us to believe. But I'm suspicious of the people who wouldn't want us to believe what some people would have us believe, if that makes sense. But there aren't too many places, because I think, and Dearborn's not a ghetto. And I think that's really the major difference here, as discussed with various people. The idea of once you have a high concentration of these people in one particular area, and they're not educated. I mean, you know, we complain about Mexico, right? Mexico's full of Einsteins compared to what's going on in regards to coming out of Syria and parts of Africa. Again, we talk about the sub-Saharan, the average IQ in sub-Saharan Africa is like 70 or something. It's like, you know, my cat's got a leg up on that, literally. So you're taking basically people who either, one, have no education or were never given an education and live in certain cultural circumstance, that when they're put in a different culture are only going to continue to do what they did in their own culture, in their own country, and drag everybody else down. I think there's a real good reason to be concerned, you know. So even if it isn't, I kill you. What was that little puppet's name with Bill, whatever his name, and Ahmed the Dead Terrorist? Yeah, Bill is somebody. I can't think of his name. It was hilarious. He used to love that stuff in the day. I haven't seen him do anything in a while. Actually, you know what it is? I saw the Christmas special. I think he did a Christmas special or something a few years ago. And it's like they made Ahmed like a really good guy in the end. And I was kind of like, Well, that's not right. It's not funny anymore. What the hell? So, but yeah, you know, it's, I think it's, at this point in time, it's kind of like the thing with Mexico, where, I think the whole idea is, from Mexico's perspective, is to just inundate the United States and change the electorate over the course of time. This is, they're playing the long con. They're huge, long game. I think that that's most likely the case in Europe, although it really doesn't seem like it now, does it? Because again, when we go back before the Syrian situation, it seems we didn't have this volume of people coming out of the Middle East, particularly Syria, into Europe. So it's been more noticeable because it's been huge. But then again, you could look at somewhere like England, which basically has a member, what is it, member of empire type deal, which I refer to as like the Israeli right of return, which basically means that if you can prove that your mother was Jewish, you can get Israeli citizen, you know, and citizenship. Because again, you know, the interesting thing about Israel, you know, we were talking about theocracy, right? The interesting thing about it, Israel is that Israel is they're largely secular. They don't, you know what I mean? They're not big. They have a lot of ultra orthodox Jews, but they're more in Brooklyn. They're more in Borough Park and where's the other one? Is it Red Hook? I forget where it is, but there's another large population of Jews. Greenpoint, perhaps, in Brooklyn. But obviously, Borough Park has the largest concentration of Hasidic Jews in the world. I mean, and that's, you know, and the vast majority of Jews in Israel are Jewish ethnic Jews. So I suppose you could say the same, and that's what's interesting in regards to talking about Islam and the idea of it's not just a religion. I think it, to a certain degree, it is an ethnicity, which is really kind of weird, because that would kind of, well, maybe weird isn't a word, but that would kind of ride on top of the idea that most of these people are all from different nations. Like, if you go into like these, and I guess they do have ghettos now. I guess they do have ghettos in these countries. If you were to walk into one of these ghettos, if you could manage to get in and out of there alive, which I think Tommy Robinson has proved isn't exactly the easiest thing in the world to do. But if you get in there and you can like actually talk to these people, if you could get them to make some sort of sounds other than the guttural noises that they make to each other, they would identify as Islamic first, and then whatever, some of them, depending upon how long they were there, would still not recognize themselves as being citizenry of the host nation, whether that be Germany, France, England, although I think Germany and France would be the worst. I mean, and that, so that says something right there. When a group of people, a huge block of people, are coming into a land, into a country, a host country, and they're not even identifying as citizens or citizenry. Citizen would be a tough word, although I guess a lot of these, again, it's that vote. It's just like, it's why the Democrats want open borders here. You know, it's why the liberals want open borders here, because they want to be able to continue to have a steady stream of, and amnesty, by the way, a steady stream of of new voters, you know, 100%, you know, it, like, what are those, like, undocumented Democrats, I think is what I have gotten to calling illegals as of late, you know, which is true. You know, I think of these things with the midterms coming up very shortly, I think of these things, but, and the same thing's happening in Europe. It's a destruction of a culture. Cultures that have been around for thousands of years are going to be like annihilated in a very short period of time. We've already seen signs of it. It's not even a theory anymore, you know? The idea that these people can come here and follow whatever laws or cultural norms that existed in their homelands, in their host countries, or They've proven that that's really basically where their head's at, you know. And I think when we talk about the idea of the mass rapes that have occurred, you know, and how rape itself, you know, you want to talk about the idea of Me Too. The Democrats here are all hopped up on Me Too. And I'm still going to say I get Me Too. I'm not willing to kick it by the wayside. But by the same token, I'm not willing to throw away the constitutional concept of innocent until proven guilty. So you can make all the accusations in the world you want, and if you can't substantiate evidence to do so, then it's just slander. That's the way it is. That's the way it's always been. I'm very sorry. You know? I think in this day and age, rape is being taken more seriously. I think in this day and age, it's probably a little bit easier or somewhat easier for rape victims to come forward and have themselves be documented and their situations be documented. I don't believe they're as dismissed out of hand as they used to be. It's harder and harder for that to occur. Let's just put it that way. It's sad that it ever did, but you know, we have made some progress. You know, regardless of what the liberals will have you believe, it's, you know, not 1865, you know, or anything like that. But yeah, the number of rapes and the number of violent crimes are up in these European countries, and the perpetrators are immigrants. I mean, there was a case not that long ago where one of the vice presidents of the European Union, his daughter was beaten and raped to death. You know, and what they do is they don't make a big deal out of it, because it's very much like you'll know, and a lot of people will know what I'm talking about. When you read a news story these days, or you see how a news story is reported, they no longer, most of the time, list the ethnicity or the color or the race of the assailant, because it's somehow biased. You can't say that a black person committed a murder or a black person committed a rape. They don't do it. You know, they're not even a person of color. There's some sort of subterfuge that they use these days, because they don't want to give certain people a bad reputation as far as race goes. And it's like, you know what? But they earned it. You know, so how are you reporting this? But that's also going on in Europe. I mean, they're neglecting to leave that sort of information out. And it does the populace and the citizenry a disjustice, because you kind of have to know what's going on and who's doing it, really. Huh? Do I think, and this is where I guess I'm kind of moving, and I've kind of been slowly merging two things together, that being the situation in Europe and what goes on here with immigration and illegal aliens and the idea of open borders. And I don't even want to get into the Cyril stuff. I should do Cyril stuff more often. One of these days I'll get into it and give an idea of where he came from and what his money does and where it goes. But yeah, I'm sitting here and I guess, you know, it comes down to this. Do I think that we could have the similar type of circumstance as Europe is now going through with their unfettered immigration and how easy it is, until they shut down borders because they can't handle it, how easy it is to move from place to place in Europe, meaning these Syrian refugees? I don't know. You know, we haven't really. The only violence we've really seen in North America is large. I mean, other than 9/11. And again, you can't dismiss 9/11. I mean, it was horrendous. Obviously, as you well know, it was horrendous. You know? You can't dismiss that. But have we had outright terrorist attacks since 9/11 in the United States? And the answer is, I don't think so, unless my drugs are kicking in, which is entirely possible. I don't really think so. But by the same token, how many have been prevented that we don't know about? Now, it's true, you can't prove a negative, but I have to presume that our intelligence agencies are doing their job. I mean, I think, speaking of intelligence agencies in 9/11, I think they took a brutal beating in 9/11, and I think maybe things are starting to come back around, but, you know, maybe not, because then we could have a whole deep state conversation in regards to the FBI and exactly who is running the FBI and what's their agenda. So, I mean, it's true. I mean, I just sit here and I could just, like, totally go around in a circle, and maybe I'll do that sometime just for fun, but tonight isn't that night. No, we haven't seen. The answer is we haven't seen, and I'm not quite sure whether that's diligence, on our particularly the FBI, but on our other intelligence agencies as far as getting intel before it happens, or whether they're just not here in high enough concentrations, or don't know. We literally don't know how many cells are, you know, terrorist cells are right now in this country, just kind of hanging out, waiting for an opportunity. And we've seen it wouldn't take much. I mean, we've seen, what was it, last Christmas, I think, or the Christmas before that? I think it was last Christmas, no. The driving in the Christmas tree area of Germany, whatever the Christmas tree shop area of Germany was, just people being mowed down with trucks and cars. I know we had something similar in Manhattan happen, but I'm not 100% sure that was, quote-unquote, religiously motivated. You know, speaking of, they're not divulging who the actual perpetrators of these crimes are in news stories. They're not even mentioning that the people are screaming Ali Akbar, you know, as they're perpetrating horrendous violence upon their citizens. They're not even, because, oh, well, we wouldn't want people to get a bad impression of Islam. And this is my point, you know, and I guess this is how I kind of got on this whole thing to begin with is I think Islam does a pretty good enough job of giving us a bad impression of itself that I don't think we need to worry about such matters. You know, people are going to be like, oh, well, so many more worse things have happened in the world than, you know, or that go on every day than what happened to this Saudi Arabian journalist. But the question now becomes is, right, how many things happen in Saudi Arabia that we don't know about now becomes the question. You know what I mean? This happened to be a high-profile guy. How many less-profile people who are dissidents, you know, or not favorable of the, you know, not speaking favorably of the royal family don't wind up getting whacked? We don't know. We don't know any of that, you know? And I can just say, I don't have the same feeling about Christians, and I don't certainly don't have the same feeling about Christians, and I certainly don't have the same feeling about even Jews, because they're not, you know, not since the 40s when they were blowing up things in the occupied, or I guess Palestine, would be the best way to put it, Jerusalem specifically, you know, the Agund and the Stern Gang, which were terrorists, which are outright terrorist organizations, and it's amazing how many of those people went on to become the first leaders of Israel. At least first generation and a little bit into the second generation of leadership in Israel. Quite amazing, actually. You know, into such time as moderates step up and put more distance between and condemn the acts of terrorism that are occurring all over the world. It doesn't matter where they're occurring here. I want to hear American Muslims stand up and say that what's happening in Europe is wrong. That what's happening in Europe is wrong. Until that happens, and until such a time as there's just less violence from Islam at all in general, my views aren't going to change. I don't consider myself to be unenlightened or a moron. You know what I mean? Not by any stretch of the imagination. It's a scary world. It's only getting scarier. Really, I think, you know, things settle down a little bit and then they get a little scary again and then they settle down. And, you know, much props to friends of mine and just anybody who has kids. I mean, I could not imagine raising kids in the current climate. I would freak out. It would freak me out. I would spaz out, I think, 100%, because you just can't keep them safe all the time. I mean, I guess you just get used to whatever, and it's just part of being a parent, where that's just, okay, you get it in perspective and whatnot. But from my, like, limited, you know, outside looking in the window perspective, there's no way I could, I don't think there's any way that I could do that without losing my friggin' mind. Seriously. Let alone domestic crime. Let's get back to the crime statistics in this country. There's been a big push, I think, with violence, and again, more violence from the left, and how it's condoned and how there isn't a problem. I think maybe next week I'll talk about that a little bit more. It seems that the left can do or say whatever it wants, and it's perfectly justified because Donald Trump is president of the United States. That's pretty much it right there. That sentence in its entirety pretty much is the only explanation that they're willing to offer. Because when you ask these people, what exactly has President Trump done to warrant this? They don't have an answer other than the fact that, well, he's President Trump. Okay. And he might have grabbed something every now and then. But, you know, beyond that, I mean, you know, it's just, you know, Bill Clinton, serial fucking rapist that he is, they didn't have any problem. No problem. So, you know, just think, you know, again, and I'll leave you with this thought because I want to play one more tune and I want to get the heck out of here. This is something that goes through my mind all the time, literally all the time as this is unfolding, because we're obviously only, what, halfway through what I and many other people hope to be President Trump's first term. If the right had been saying and acting like the left now is when Barack Obama was elected, what do you think the result would have been? I mean, do you not think that there would have been an extreme reaction from the left? It didn't happen. The worst, and again, this is I was talking to producer about this. I think the worst that I can remember is during one of the rallies there or whatever it was, one of the Tea Party protests, was what's his name, the old nigger dude who claimed that somebody called him nigger when he was John, I can't even think of his name, one of the freedom rider Mortimer dudes, you know, on the bus or whatever it was, handing out the fried chicken on the bus, whoever that dude was, you know, the guy who claims that this happened in a large crowd of people, yet zero is he, well, it's okay to be white, it's okay, look, two of them, it's okay to be white, zero evidence, gots, as the Italians would say, gots evidence that it ever happened. So he says it happened, but yet nobody has it on cell phone or any sort of video or any sort of audio or nothing. That's the worst you could say about the Tea Party. Oh, and I think I heard somebody the other day say, oh, they were walking around with guns at this rally. And you want to know what? It was their legal right to do so. Long arms, specifically rifles. It was their legal right to do so. Sorry, man. But anyway, maybe I'll get a little bit more into the left and violence next week, because it's ongoing and it's interesting and it's a little bit Antifa and it's just a little bit of just mindset in general. The paradigm is totally insane. I don't remember how I got started on this. I know I wanted to talk about Saudi Arabia a little bit and that journalist, and I still think it's the same. Anytime a journalist is murdered for printing or reporting on what they perceived to be the truth, it's wrong. I hold journalists up to a higher, you know, I hold them in a higher regard. I put them pretty much in like law enforcement and like firemen that high when they're actually doing their job. You know, for someone to be murdered just because he's a journalist is absolutely wrong, 100%. He may not be the best journalist in the world, right? But it's 100% wrong. You know, head over to like somewhere like Project Veritas. I believe I still have them in my links. If you head over to lfmidwood.com, let me do this real quick. Head over to lfmidwood.com. You got links and archives and contact thingamajiggles and all sorts of stuff. So head over to lfmidwood.com. Tell your friends. Tell the friends you don't like. There you go. We could start there. And hopefully I'll be seeing and hearing from you next week. You'll be seeing and hearing from me next week, you know. LFMidwood@LFMidwood.com. LFMidwood@LFMidwood.com is the email address. Feel free to drop me a line and try and convince me of anything. I'm open. Change my mind. Anyway, let's see if I can make this work, because I want to do over here. I want to hit this. I'm going to do this. Yeah. Oh, look at that. And I'm going to do that.
Look on yonder misty mountain, see the young monk meditating, rhododendron forests over dusty hills. I am
so far out. Looking through crystal spectacles, I can see you have your fun. Looking through crystal spectacles, I can see you have your fun. Doing as big for thy credo, the teacher suspicious about insanity. Fingers always touching, girl. Up through the levels you've been changing, getting a little bit better, no doubt. The thought of it was so far out. Looking through all kinds of windows, I can see a happy fun. Looking through crystal spectacles, I can see a happy fun.
Been listening to the Midwood Files on Radio New York International. Thanks for listening.